You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
It might seem dark, but there is a light, a beautiful light. Just turn towards the light. That light is Judith Light. When it seems too dark, just turn on the light, but not that light. Let the light of Judith Light light up the dark, dark up the light. Light up the Judith, Judith. When you can't see, just turn on that Judith light. When you feel lost, just turn on that Judith light. When you need a laugh or when you need a cry, turn on that Judith light. Who? Turn on that Judith light. How dare you say who? Turn on that Judith light. If you don't know, Google it. Turn on that Judith light. Music.
Welcome to the New World Pictures Podcast. We're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures and New World Television. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
There might have been a time that I would have been interested in stamp collecting. Not anymore.
And Erica.
Ryan, can I have a cat?
No. No, I am quite allergic. I'm quite allergic. That is a big no. It's a big no. And welcome to the end of March Madness 2, Let's Get Nuts, where we talk about some of the crazier movies released by New World Television in this case. We hope you've enjoyed this month. We've talked about a couple other movies from the 70s, but now we're jumping all the way to 1987's Dangerous Affection.
Kathy Proctor is a successful author.
Is dramatic.
A not too successful wife. A mother. And a mother to be. Now, she and her son are about to have a chance encounter that will change their lives.
Is that Jaws?
He is a master of high-tech espionage. A secret classified document reduced to the size of a postage stamp will put him on a collision course with two innocent people.
I guarantee I'll have it within 24 hours. It's not in the apartment. The kid still has it.
For them, everyday life becomes a nightmare. As suddenly, she's become the prime suspect in her husband's murder.
Are you going to arrest me for murder? Because that's what you think, isn't it?
It may be difficult, but this is no time to hold back information, to keep anything from me.
Now, the detective who's been assigned to investigate her is beginning to believe her life is in danger.
Kathy?
Dangerous Affection. Starring Judith Light, Emmy Award winner Rhea Perlman, and Emmy Award nominee Jimmy Smits. Dangerous Affection.
That's 1987's Dangerous Affection, aka Stamp of a Killer, brought to you by 1986 computer scanning technology.
Yay!
Do you think you can't scan something in 1080p quality in the 1980s? Wrong. You can. You can even make it super tiny. So tiny, you can put it on a stamp. Yes, in the 1980s, computers are magic and can do anything, despite evidence to the contrary, like using them. With 1980s computer scanning technology, you will never, ever have a problem. Unless, you know, you have a problem. This was directed by Larry Elkin, a veteran TV director who worked on countless TV movies, movies that I saw, including 1985's Poison Ivy, where Michael J. Fox and Nancy McKeon of Facts of Life play camp counselors. Boy, did I have that on VHS. Did I record that off TV? Also, Dallas, The Early Years.
Wow.
This particular movie. Years. The best years, yeah. When they were when it was real. It was so real. This particular movie falls between what I can only describe as Elkin's Stranger trilogy, because he also directed 1987's Stranger in My Bed and Hands of a Stranger, and then 1988's Stranger on My Land with Tommy Lee Jones. Just a lot of strangers. A lot of TV movies about strangers.
The more that you bring up his movies, I think his the titles are Stranger.
You know, it's true.
Yeah.
This was written by Irish writer Annabelle Davis Goff, who was fresh off of her divorce in 1986 from director Mike Nichols.
Yeah.
Who would marry news anchor Diane Sawyer a year later in 1988. Was this script somewhat based in her life?
I hope that she paid more attention to her son than Kathy did of her son in this
they
movie.
They did have a son and a daughter.
Wow.
So
I'm just saying, she's very quick to just let that kid go anywhere.
Anywhere. So, well, anywhere. You forget how we were raised in the 80s, Mark. It was a little bit more freewheeling. Good to know that.
Oh, what a breakthrough.
Finally. You've been working for months to get to this point. And look, we did it in one podcast. Of course, what is good is that the preschool security of the 1980s is still rock solid. That is still very good.
Nothing's tighter than preschool security. I mean, two snaps for that. Preschool security.
Yeah. Also writing the script, Susan Rice, who had written the 1986 TV movie Something in Common, which was produced by New World Television.
No.
So we will be talking about that. Yes.
Yes, rooting for Canon on that one.
Yeah.
About an older woman who falls in love with a younger man.
Boy, that's a plot that's never been discussed.
Yeah. I don't know.
We can only touch it at that point in TV movies.
Can't relate.
It was time for us all to gather around and talk about it. But this stars Judith Light. Then
hell
a star
yeah, it does.
On TV on her fourth season of Who's the Boss? Who's the Boss? Answer, Mona. Come on. Pulling all the strings. Manipulating Mona. Everybody from her upstairs apartment. Come on now. We all know it's true. Anyway, Light described the tone of this movie to the Associated Press in 1987. She said, quote, "It's a comedy, drama, mystery, thriller, romance. It's all of those things."
Whoa. Hold on.
Yep.
Comedy.
Oh, yeah. There's some comedy.
Okay. There is. Let me rephrase. I'm sorry. My bad. Intentional comedy?
I think they did think this was going to be funnier than watching it. You're like, okay, I can see where they thought this is a killer funny line, but
all right.
Eye of the beholder, I suppose. She continues, "Those pieces are not just thrown in carelessly. You watch a girl become a woman. My character grows up in the movie in a very rough way."
But girl becomes a woman. She's 9 months pregnant in this movie.
No, I think she just meant that she just is talking about her character's growth, I guess. And she does grow very quickly because a lot happens in like a span of a couple days in her life. It's pretty intense. Here's where you can watch this movie, and boy, do I suggest you do so. Look, I'm just going to get it out right at top. You know, like, we have had so much good fortune with the TV movies we've released that we watch for New World. I know we're going to get some duds. So far, I'm having a great time. Whether it's, you know, shoulder kisses or it's OP center or whatever it is, I'm having so much fun with these movies. I think they're so fun. But anyway, you can watch a movie on Prime, on Shout TV, Plex. I believe it is also on Tubi.
Tubi.
That's at the time of this recording. But now let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is Dangerous Affection about?
It's really simple, Ryan. When you find someone you want to spend the rest of your life with, don't let like a passed out murderer in the same room as you distract you. Don't let the fact that the love of your life is giving birth in front of you.
Yeah, that's right.
Seize the moment.
That's right.
Ask the question. Mm-hmm. Right there. Okay? Mm-hmm. It may seem like this is bad timing. Mm-hmm. But don't. Because in those moments of desperate fear / pain / joy of the birth of a child, you're almost guaranteed a yes.
Almost. Take advantage of an emotional time.
Take advantage.
Erica, what is this movie about?
I didn't realize it had such a deep emotional impact on you, Mark. I didn't realize how dangerous it was to collect stamps, if I'm being perfectly honest. It seemed like I'm looking back and thinking back on all the random, you know, self-applied tattoos and stickers that my kids took throughout the years and put on themselves or on a lunchbox or, you know, something else. And I'm thinking, damn, what, you know, important classified information was on that? I guess we'll never know.
We had no idea.
Yeah.
For me, I thought this movie was about be careful giving too much time and energy to a friend because you may get left in the dust by the end.
That's true.
Yeah.
Just take care of yourself. Your needs are important too.
Yes. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Let's go to the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you dare.
I dare you. Go for it. Do it. I bet you won't. Give us a 5-star review.
You go look up New World Podcast on Letterboxd and give us a follow.
What's the matter? You afraid to give us a 5-star review? Come on. But you can't.
I'm not even on Letterboxd. I dare you to register. I dare you to register for an account.
Log in. You probably go won't. In, bounce out. Never use Letterboxd ever.
You're a big wuss, but I dare you. Prove it.
I'll tell you what. You log in. You create your own account. You go onto your homepage, and then you're bombarded with ads, and it feels like you've downloaded a virus, but you haven't. It's just the free account. Challenge accepted.
That's what it's like. Do you like obstacles? Yeah. Do you like jumping over obstacles from your seat?
Yeah.
While sitting down?
Yeah.
Bam, bam, jump. Yep.
That's Letterboxd.
Punch. Letterboxd.
Even the Navy SEALs train on obstacle courses. Mm-hmm. Do you want to be as hard as a Navy SEAL?
They make you stay up for a week, and then you got to log all the movies you saw the week before. Just like Letterboxd.
Boom.
And you're like, I can't remember. They're like, log it.
Log it, you pussy.
Log it.
Yeah. You think Judith Light was taking it easy when she was laying in bed, giving birth, accepting a marriage proposal, worrying about her son, questioning where her mom was with the boiling hot water?
With potentially a dead guy next to her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Log it.
Yeah.
Log it. The least you can do is the review.
I'm pretty sure that Judith Light wrote this review or wrote this description. So come on, Ryan.
Let's go. Let's hear it.
Let's hear Judith's voice.
It's so quick. It is one sentence, and it's this: a pregnant mother and her young son become the target of a killer.
Oh. Boom. Watch it. If that isn't enough to hook you.
Yeah.
Let me lay this down. Rhea Perlman. Let me lay this down. Jimmy Spitz, no facial hair. Go for it. Go for it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Do it.
Judith Light, yes, is the lead in this movie. She plays a working writer and illustrator of children's books who has a sweet typewriter but no art supplies. So, I don't know. Did she go to a separate apartment to do the drawing? I don't know. In any case, she's also 9 months pregnant, but still easily capable of walking through Pike Place Fish Market in Seattle with her best friend, played by award winner Rhea Perlman of Cheers.
David called me.
Think you should be talking to him?
Well, he is the father of my children.
Yeah, how would you know?
Well, there's never been anyone else.
That's not what I meant. I meant David does not behave like a father or a husband. What kind of man would abandon a pregnant wife?
An ambitious actor?
She's about to have lunch, that is to say Judith Light, her character is named Kathy. She's about to have lunch with her husband, who's a bit estranged. And that's significant because things have not been going well, and it's going to about to go worse when she gets to this lunch.
And what about this one? The one in here?
The baby was a mistake.
A mistake? You think you can dismiss it just like that?
Kathy, calm down.
You want me to be calm? You tell me you plan to abandon me and your children, you want me to sit here and swallow that without making a sound? Well, I won't. I'm angry. You disgust me. You are a vain, cold, pompous, uncaring, selfish son of a bitch.
Kathy, quit being so dramatic.
Dramatic? That's not dramatic. This is dramatic.
A plate of spaghetti on the head. And Mark, yeah, you dared to say this isn't a comedy.
Yeah.
Oh.
No, the comedy to me was the
evidence came fast and fierce on this one.
The comedy to me was the serving tray size of salad that he had in front of him that he didn't take a single bite of.
Because he's an actor. He ordered a salad for looks enormous that salad. He knows if he wants to button them skinny jeans, don't take a single bite.
Don't eat. Don't eat. Also love that during this whole thing, like when she starts freaking out and getting loud, he just starts to laugh.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, that's like some psycho stuff. This is not his first restaurant dumping.
Yeah.
He's like... As soon as they start getting mad, he's like, ha ha ha, we're
the staff doesn't react, so they know him. Mm-hmm. He's known there. Like, he's a restaurant dumper. They hate him.
Yeah.
Yeah. They flick boogers in his salad. Those aren't. That's not.
It's where Parmesan won't eat cheese. It. He knows too. This is a vicious game between the staff and him.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't eat this salad. They flick their boogers in it.
He's like, wait a minute. Why did they bring me clam chowder? This is just a bowl of semen, isn't it? It's just, there's nothing. Is there even seafood in this?
A bowl.
He's like, wait a minute. I ordered the soup and salad combo, and that comes with a cup of soup. Why is there a bowl here?
Sheila, gather all the male staff members. The guy's coming.
The restaurant dumper's back. He's here with Kathy. Everybody, semen stat.
You have to order that a week in advance to get a bowl of semen, but it's so worth it. Like they just it's
worth it.
They always keep a bowl warm just in case he comes in.
Is that him? All right. Okay.
No, it's not him. Just keep it warm.
Put your wieners away, gentlemen. No one needs a garnish tonight.
Phil, keep stirring the semen soup. Keep stirring. That thing can get real claggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lunch rush is over. Just put your wiener away. I think we're good.
Yeah. Oh, you're stirring it with your wiener. Okay, cool. I mean whatever floats your boat.
I accept, but then put it away.
Sorry. I didn't realize you were using your wiener as the spoon.
Wait. Who took a bite of this soup? This is not actually... This guy's...
That was me, disgusting. Boss. It tastes delicious.
I wasn't sure if it was salted enough. So I did throw in garlic and some salt.
I'm a chef. I can't help myself. I seasoned.
I just want to see that motherfucker eat every bite of it. I want to see him wipe the crostini and eat the last bite and lick his fingers. And then I come out and I go, waha! Semen soup! Full bowl!
Okay, now that we've talked everybody out of continuing... Let's move on. Meanwhile, we've been tracking along with Judas Light a very bad man. A man so bad he fills his briefcase with guns and other items. Just loosey-goosey in that briefcase, he's got a gun. That's just loose, all loose as you walk up and down the sidewalk.
No reason to clamp him down. Just let him jiggle around.
Jiggle around.
No problem.
Nothing can go wrong. Just a live gun. Nothing happens there. And he also is so bad he drowns people in shallow trays, a film developer. That's the kind of bad man that we're dealing with.
If your head gets shoved into a tray of film developing fluid, what is it? Mm-hmm. I don't know what the fluid is. Couldn't you just like turn your head to the side and just be like,
yeah, I mean, I would say,
I think I'm okay.
Couldn't I fill my mouth with fluid and then get it low enough so that I could just breathe through my nose?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Then I could just be like, and pretend that I'm dead, and then when he lets me go,
oh, I'm dead.
Pow!
Oh.
Yeah. Punch to the soup spoon. You know what I mean?
I'm just saying an inch to maybe an inch and a half of fluid is not enough.
And he goes down quick. He goes down quick. But
I feel like you could also swallow a little bit of that. I mean,
real soft.
You might throw up or have diarrhea, and that might throw the killer off. Ew, diarrhea. I don't want to finish killing you. Oh, gross. God. You're pooping your pants. Ew.
Oh.
Yeah. Saying it's a tactic.
Die fast. I got a restaurant I got to get to. I got a delicious bowl of soup waiting for me.
Ooh, I need to. My restaurant will want this diarrhea for dessert. Ooh, let me go.
So why is he trying to kill this guy? It's crucial to the plot because he goes to see this guy who can transfer sensitive secrets of a nebulous sort. We don't really know exactly what's going on.
Handwritten secrets.
Handwritten secrets of some kind. It doesn't matter. And then he puts him onto a stamp, which is like, oh, okay. But also, I had one question. How?
We'll never know. The guy who does it died. I don't know. He could die with him, dog.
So dies the secret. Dunno.
Yep. Dunno. Because he didn't know he could just... He didn't know.
I think as soon as the killer left the room, he was like, phew, I dodged a bullet in that one. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm up.
He could have just this way,
just
raspberried some
it.
Of that developer out of the way.
Oh my God! Do something, please.
But my point is, you can do digital watermarking, where you can put algorithms into the space of an image. I don't know if you could have done that in the 80s, but theoretically, if you reduce the size of an image and have it match the color of the image that's superimposed on, I don't know how you get it out of there.
How you get it out? It's exactly
I don't
what I was
know,
about to say.
But you could do it. I don't know how you get it out. And fortunately, this movie never comes close to explaining that.
Right.
I loved it for that. I don't need to know. I just loved thinking it's possible.
You know what? Those details don't matter. I love that about this movie, too.
Mm-hmm.
The man, of course, the bad man is Michael Parks, who is known mostly now for his work with Quentin Tarantino. But he got his acting start in the late 60s. He was appearing in a bunch of obscure projects at this point in time, such as he was in French Quarter Undercover, which was directed by Terror in the Swamps, Joe Catalanato. He also had his
Swarm.
This is like 1986. The Swarm.
We can't go off half cocktail.
And he also had his own lone directorial effort, The Return of Josie Wales. I don't think Clint Eastwood was anywhere near that. But this is the kind of weird stuff he was working on at the time, plus a bunch of TV movies, including this. But anyway, he does somehow kill this stamp recreator digital image guy who's vanquished by a puddle of chemicals, and then he takes some lighter fluid and ignoring the film developing liquid that is in the room already and burns up the evidence and heads outside. And one of the best sequences in the movie, this weird handoff sequence, here's how it happens. He has the stamp in a plastic bag. He goes to hand it to somebody in a limo, knocks on the window. attempts to hand it off, but a Hare Krishna or a druid priest, I'm not sure who it was.
I'm going with druid priest on that one. Hardcore D&D gamer. Yeah. Just hardcore.
Cosplayer, yep.
Some LARPers just outside the mall or wherever he was walking around.
Fair.
He grabs it, and he's like, change of plans or whatever he says, grabs it and runs off, and only for Michael Parks to run after him and catches him, because I guess the giant robe, blue robe that he's wearing,
well, if that robe is tight, if it's tight, you can't get the leg width, you know, you can't get a good stride.
You can't go too fast.
You know, it's like a mini skirt.
Yep. So he, I don't know what his plan was then, to steal this thing and not be able to run too far. It doesn't matter, because Michael Parks catches up to him very quickly, about 10 feet away, stabs him. And then a cop sees this, so Michael Parks runs away. He's running maybe back to the limo, but he doesn't. Instead, he runs into the mall, where Judith Light and her son are walking out, but he drops the plastic bag with the stamp on the ground, and the kid picks it up, and he's fascinated. I wish I could read the script. I just want to know how, like, it's the most amount of random events to happen in one small sequence.
He has one cop that's chasing him, and he's in one of those rotation doors, you know, that he's spinning around. He sees the kid pick up the stamp. He could do one little, like, swoop out of the door, grab the stamp, go swooping back in and be on his way. Instead, he stops and goes, I'll have to get this kid later.
Yeah.
What can I do? I can't. There's nothing I could do right now.
Mm-hmm.
What? It's a 10-second move, and he could have been on his way. And we could have rolled credits, and we would all be done right now. Thanks, everybody. Go check out newworldpicturespodcast.com.
And why was that guy trying to steal the stamp in the first place? What was the point of that? What was he even doing? It was so good. It's such a great way to kick off this movie, because you're like, hell yes, this doesn't make any sense. I love it. I'm having a great time.
Good thing we revisit those guys, those druid guys, later in the movie, and we learn their backstory.
Right.
And
we learned a lot about them.
What was going on with them, and that they were part of another organization that was going to use the stamp, and they'd been waiting this whole time. Oh, wait, no. We never cover any of that.
It's a crucial C-plot to the movie. It's not...
it found its way on the editing room floor. Otherwise, this movie was actually 3.5 hours, because we covered it a whole lot.
Release the director's cut, you cowards.
Release it.
So the kid takes the stamp, eventually glues it onto the back of his hand.
We're pretty sure that stamp is ruined. He put Elmer's glue on it, which is going to cause, because it's water-based, it's going to cause rippling in the stamp. It's going to leave shiny or like different spots in the stamp, and it's going to become totally brittle, that by the time you tear it off of him, it's useless. So
it's not going to be worth anything to a collector
or to a spy that's trying to get the information out of it, which we still don't know how that's going to work, but
I still don't know how that works, but one of the great things about this one is, in this movie, is that it has a lot of these like fake out tense moments. And one of which is like following the killer. He goes to find the daycare in the phone book. And then, we go to Judith Light's apartment, and somebody is opening the door, and the music starts to swell, and they're like slowly turning the knob, and you're like, what could it be? The killer? Like We just saw him 2 seconds ago looking up a phone book and talking on the phone. But you're like, is it him? And of course it's not. It's her husband coming by. But I love all these little like, is it the killer? No, it's not the killer. She's just moving on with her life. He's not there yet. Because the killer's plan to get this thing back is so bad. He has the worst plan trying to retrieve this stamp. Like, it's a stamp that a kid put on his hand. It's really, honestly, it should not
with
be this
Elmer's
difficult.
Glue, remember. Yeah.
But anyway, the husband's coming by. He's going to get his things. Judith yells at him in the hallway in front of a neighbor. And that's a crucial thing, a crucial little point once the police get involved. And boy, do the police get involved. as Jimmy Smits enters the film as a police detective who cannot solve why he is so taken with Judith Light.
Mm-hmm.
But does he want to? I mean, after... But why does he want to? Why does he want to solve that mystery? He's just happy to live in it.
Like a moth to the flame, he was drawn to the light.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, can you blame him?
Can you?
No.
And so the killer, like we said, he's got a terrible plan. He tries to take the kid out of the daycare, the preschool that he's in. Which, by the way, the kid is... Like, the actor who plays the kid is, like, 6 years old. So, like, he's supposed to be playing a four-year-old, but I'm like, there's no way that kid is 4 years old.
Also, the kid is a fucking psychopath. I mean, that kid, he's a fucking lunatic. I mean, this is a kid that his mom...
He's been abandoned by his father, okay? He has no...
And his father dies,
and he never asks once about his father.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he's fucking bitching because he wanted sliced bananas, not mashed bananas. Like, this kid.
That felt real, though. That part felt very real. But I always serve it to you this way. But today I wanted a different way. I was like, ooh, that's
right.
That's too familiar.
Yeah.
But what's the payoff? He bitches about the bananas. He doesn't end up eating any banana. And what does he get for it?
A cat.
A fucking promise eventually. For a cat.
A cat.
This kid is the ultimate manipulator. He's like, okay, tonight I'm going to fucking bitch about bananas, and I'll finally get that cat I always wanted.
Mm-hmm.
If this had gone like a different way, and they were like, you know what? I think your son might be the son of Satan. Different movie. We're going in a different direction. But like, you would be like, I could see it.
That would justify the rest of the plot, right? Yeah. Because he goes and he is so fast to head to grandma's. He's so fast to hang out with Carla Tortellini. Claudia. I mean, are they the same person? Is Claudia and Carla the same person?
Are you saying that Rhea Perlman can't play a vast variety of characters? How dare.
But she also understood loss because Vinny left her and left her with all those kids.
Yeah, this one, she can't get any man. So she's got all the time in the world to take care of Judith Light's bullshit.
Fair. She does need to find a life.
Yeah.
Her life is just wrapped.
Too ready to just... Yes. Do whatever. And we'll get to that in a second. But the police get involved because Jimmy Smits comes over once the killer tries to take the kid out of daycare or preschool. And then Smits, who's taking a break from pretend lawyering on L.A. Law. That's what he was doing at the time.
Hold on.
Also, don't forget Running Scared. He was amazing in Running Scared.
No, totally. So... This guy was in Running Scared, one of our favorite action movies
of
the 80s.
For sure.
Then he had a small...
Mike Coke!
Mike Coke! He had a small part in Hot Shot with Pele. Then he was in...
We gotta see Hot Shot.
Then he was in The Believers, which is a fucking great movie with Martin Sheen. Mm-hmm. And then this? Like, I've never been an actor. But the ebbs and flows, the peaks and valleys of acting sometimes are shocking.
Well, you know, you're getting all these different roles and then you finally land something on TV and you don't know how long probably at that point. L.A. Lodge is just starting. You don't know how long that's going to go. And you're like, I still got to keep my movie thing going. So you're just like grabbing any. I mean, once you start getting offers like crazy, you're probably just saying yes. And saying yes to things has not done Jimmy Smits badly. He's been in lots of stuff.
Yes, he has.
And anyway, he goes into her apartment and he gets super interested in her typewriter.
My publisher gave it to me.
I'm impressed.
Don't be. I asked for it instead of an advance on my next book. It's a real time saver.
What does it do exactly?
Well, You can buy the Jackie Collins software and I'll write you a bestseller.
Really?
Yeah. That's the good news. The bad news is it costs $5 million to buy the program. Actually, they say it has a computerized memory, but I know better. It's magic. Remembers everything I type.
Can I try it?
Sure.
And I love that what he does is he goes to the computer, she shows him a little bit how it works. It's only because it's a plot point later. And then he's like, hey, well, I wish I could help you out. Your son didn't get taken. I got to run. I love that. And also love the fact that computers are magic. And this clip also shows, we were sort of doing it while the clip was playing, but like, this movie has this sort of like, this like corny sense of humor that they're like, hark, like it could write a whole book by Jackie Collins, you know what I mean? By the way, kids, a popular writer at the time. And they're like, you'd have to, it cost you $5 million though for the program, har, har, har. And everybody laughs at any half-hearted joke of any kind in this movie. And I find that so, so satisfying. I don't know why. But I love the fact that they all just, like, crack up at the dumbest stuff. It just makes me so happy.
So, Kathy, when you see him, does it make you want to kill him?
No, it makes me want his toiletries out of my medicine chest.
Well, it would have been a lot simpler if you just changed the lock.
No, it's better this way. I don't want any trace of him in the apartment.
Yeah, well, as long as he doesn't take your stuff, too.
He wouldn't. Nothing would fit him.
Kathy is willing to drop everything and crash at a friend's house. She's acting less like a nine-month pregnant woman and acting more like a college student that's just like, friends are like, hey, you want to crash here? She's like, I didn't bring anything, but fuck it. And she does that repeatedly in this
repeatedly,
movie.
Repeatedly, yeah.
She's 9 months pregnant, and she's just like,
And with the son. Fine. Like, she, partly, like, when she stays at Rhea Perlman's, like,
Carlos,
she's got a little boy with him. She's got a little boy with her. Like,
yeah.
Do you don't have anything for him? Like, how, you know?
She doesn't. She's just like, I came with nothing. Sure, we'll crash. No big deal.
Yeah.
I'll wear what I wore today, tomorrow. No big deal. I'll sleep in what I wore today. No big deal.
It's all good. It's
wild... I'm 9 months pregnant. I definitely didn't sweat through whatever outfit I have on right now.
Right.
I'm sure it'll be just as fresh tomorrow as it is today.
Super We're fresh.
But yes, things get even more tense because Kathy does come back to her apartment and finds her delinquent husband dead in her chair. Takes her a while to find him. Does the smell not tip her off?
I guess not.
Have an impact?
Ryan, I don't think the smell of a dead person happens that fast.
I just remember Erica being 9 months pregnant and really could
Are you
honestly...
talking about Kathy's smell or the dead husband's smell?
No. Erica, when she was not pregnant, she could smell like something that was like 3 miles away. Like her senses were incredibly heightened, and it was like there's no way. And she would come in and be like, "The dog's pooping here. What's going on?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know," but she could smell anything, and she would be right, you know. So because shit all over our house.
Wow. Ah, memories.
But like Judith Light, you wouldn't discover that for 30 more minutes.
Right.
Yeah. Until I step in it and then turn a chair around and I'm like, what the heck?
You swivel a chair around and there's a dog turd. What?
What on earth?
What? Who did that? Who climbed up on a chair and took a dump on it?
My stars.
I almost sat in that.
I was about to take a seat.
Oh my God. Yeah. But let's talk about Rhea Perlman for a second because we've already brought her up. I like to call her character, she's a TV archetype I like to call the manic pixie dream friend. Because she's always there when you need her.
Always. We'll find you on the street.
On the street. Like, she's just there. Like, oh, I'm right here. I'm there. I'm here. I've been waiting outside your apartment for you. She's filled with great advice. always tells you the thing that you need to hear, mm-hmm. a constant emotional support. She's picking up Sam from school, or she's babysitting Sam at the last minute.
Or need her to take a five-hour Greyhound ride? She's right. down.
Yeah. Oh, I'll take your, yeah, out to wherever your mom is here in Washington State. Like.
And then I guess just turn around and leave immediately.
Yeah. And then just take off. Like, well, you got everything under control. I'll just go solo back yeah. home.
Back.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I have to go take whatever way she we hold, got
here. She told the driver, hold. I just yeah. need 1 minute. I need 1 minute to mm-hmm. drop this kid off. And they'll be right back.
He was like, please drop this kid off. He's obnoxious. keeps asking me if I want to be his dad.
This ride is all for you, Sam.
She buys him PJs. She buys him a marionette. She buys him a t-shirt. I mean, good Lord.
What does Rhea Perlman's character do in this movie? What is she? Does she have anything else going on?
We'll never know. I mean, in the director's cut, there's a whole subplot where we learn about her whole backstory.
She connected to those druids?
No.
Oh, man.
No. But Vinny, her husband, keeps coming around, and she's got the five kids.
Oh, boy.
And then, actually, you find out that she works for a bar as a waitress. But, I mean, that was all cut, unfortunately.
The commute from Seattle to Boston's a real pain in the ass.
That's
she
why
it.
She's
she does it
and she does
complaints.
It on a Greyhound.
Yep. She also, like we said, she sneaks Sam out of town, goes to the grandmother's house because Judith Light was not sold on her muscle bound police protection. So she's got like the buffest cop on the force.
Who while she's just passing time, is doing sit-ups.
She's working out all the time. You don't.
While I'm
don't,
here, I'll do sit-ups.
Yep. Yeah. You got to keep it up. You know, you can't just like get that body and then just think, oh, it'll just maintain itself.
Yeah. No.
While Rhea Perlman's driving, get in this bus with the kid going up to the mom's house. What is Judith Light doing? Why, she's staying over at Jimmy Smith's place.
Again, didn't bring a bag, just like he's like, you want to stay? And she's like, sure.
They were literally just talking in her place when they have this conversation.
I better go.
I'll walk you.
What?
Well, you can call it old fashioned, but I don't like to send my dates home alone. Or my witnesses as suspects. Let alone a beautiful pregnant woman.
What do you usually do with them?
Suspects and witnesses, I usually call a squad car. Dates, I ask to stay over. I don't know what to do with a pregnant woman. This is my first time.
Oh.
Would you like to?
What?
Stay over.
Of course not.
Oh, no. I didn't mean that. That wasn't a proposition. I was just going to offer you this alphabet here.
Oh, of course. It's what I thought.
What?
What?
What? What kind of bucket list does Jimmy Smith's character have? He's like, hey, on my bingo card, I had pregnant lady, super pregnant lady.
Mm-hmm. His friends were like, dude, I bet you can't hook up with that pregnant lady. I mean, you've hooked up with everything. You are like, you're a real player, but I bet you can't get
real
someone 9 months pregnant. And he was like, fucking A, I'll show you guys.
Watch me, dudes. Watch me.
He's like, not only am I going to bag a super pregnant lady, then I'm going to go to the restaurant where her husband dumped her. I'm going to eat a whole bowl of that clam chowder, dogs. Try me. I'm crazy.
No. Don't eat the clam chowder. No. We
you can't stop me.
Don't,
you can't stop
don't,
me eating
no,
that clam
no, no,
chowder.
No.
You can't
I'm
stop
not,
me.
I'm saying it's
it,
not
dude.
In your...
I can't wait. I'm going to eat
I'm
it.
I'm saying you really shouldn't
eat
the clam chowder.
I might eat a bowl first. I might
no,
go over
no,
first.
No. Don't eat the clam chowder. I'm saying
celebrate
don't...
first.
No. Don't celebrate first. Don't celebrate first.
This is so weird and unnecessary that this movie's like, yeah, and this cop and her fall in love. Like, she's hiding out from a killer or someone who wants to take her son. She takes him. She's a suspect now in the case because they think that because she yelled at her husband in the hallway that she maybe is a suspect. Also, they're always going to, you know, their first suspect in a case like this would always be the significant other, especially in a rocky relationship. But so she, but now she's going to stay at his place, which she does. She stays at his place for a couple days. Just with checking in on again, Sam every so often with no bag, no overnight bag. She brought
no overnight bag. He doesn't have outfits for her.
Sharing toothbrushes.
Yeah. Whoa, this is not good. This is.
No.
Oof. Oof.
Yeah. Wearing the same chonies the whole time.
Yeah. That for me, that's. That's not it.
Chonies. That's
not it. Yeah. Not good. Not good.
Change those chonies.
But he's not turned off by that at all. He's like, I am down. I am down with everything that you're putting up.
He is like, I'm
loving it.
This goes on for a while, and it is outrageous, and I loved every second of it. It is so ridiculous.
And it is not subtle.
No.
Like, he makes it very clear that he's I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm willing to actually sacrifice my job, because HR would be saying,
what is going on here?
This is you a violation.
Took a murder suspect back to your home and had them stay the night?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you provided a towel and a nightgown to this person?
Yeah. Wait, you punched out a guy that was trying to tow your car? Yep. I think maybe we have to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is not going to go so well. Good luck explaining that one. Yeah. I had to hurry because we had to get back to her mom's place. Because she was staying over the night at my place while her son was at her...
Hold on.
What?
Her mom's place?
Hold on.
What?
Anyway, Judy realizes... Judy, I'm calling her Judy now. She realizes her magic typewriter might hold a clue. So they go back and it prints out the fact that the guy had been in an apartment, printed out all of the numbers on the magic typewriter, including her mother's.
Also, are we supposed to assume that he typed that in order to get a copy of it? Or she had already typed in something that was on a chalkboard right next to her?
I think we're supposed to think that he typed in for himself all the numbers on there. Not just, like, grabbed a piece of paper and just wrote everything down.
Because nowhere in the house was a pen?
Again, she has no drawing utensil. There's nowhere you can't draw anything. It's just typewriter only. It's the only thing on that desk. She's like, I'm also an illustrator. Are you? We're all not believing it. Because you do not have anywhere where you draw. Anyway, that's when they rush off to her mom's place. That leads to our incredible end of this movie. But before we talk about anything about that,
let's talk a little bit about things we loved and things we hated.
We're going to talk about the things we loved and the things we hated about Dangerous Affection, a.k.a. Stamp of a Killer. Mark, what did you love?
Look, I loved how every character in this movie is over the top. And I know we've covered some of this, but like Kathy splits her time between being like extremely angry and then also overly like over the top sweet to her son. David is an asshole only. Like he never shows any.
Her like, husband, hey, you're talking about.
Yeah, the husband, the ex-husband, never shows any like, I'm kind of cool. I'm kind of a nice guy. He's just like pure asshole all the time.
He called his second baby a mistake. Yes. She's 9 months pregnant. He's dumping her. He has no interest in their son.
No interest in the son. None at all. The guy that's trying to get stamps.
But he's an actor and all he cares about is career. And I was kind of like, I could buy that.
But he's like, there's no... this movie gives you no reason to believe that he could be a nice guy that would justify why they would be together. Yeah. And then the hitman, like, he never sleeps, he never pees, he never eats. He's just like pure hitman.
He also never comes up with a plan, but never, true.
Zero plan. Zero. He has no plan. He is 4 days late on his deliverable and has zero plan on how he's going to get it done. Mm-hmm. The detective that is covering or shadowing her is obsessed with working out. Like, she's doing sit-ups when they're waiting. Sure. She's flexing, doing body flexing in the apartment just to herself. Like, so over the top. And then Jimmy Smits is like overly suspicious yet overly flirty cop.
All this, I'm just like, checking in. These are all things you loved, or
yeah, I loved. I loved. Okay, I'm getting to it.
It's a big wind up here.
This movie, no characters are subtle in any way, and I loved how they are just extreme at all times. There is a scene with Judith Light and Jimmy Smits sitting on a park bench, and she's going through an emotional breakdown.
Hell yeah. I know what you're talking about. Let's do it.
And she is elevator scanning him through the whole time. Yep. Down to his crotch, up to his face. Down to his crotch, up to his... And I'm like, what is happening in this scene? They're trying to have us be like, this is an emotional breakdown moment. And she is saying, let's bone.
Yeah.
Like, now.
I got dumped one day. Mm-hmm. The next morning I came back, he was dead. Now I'm staying in your apartment the next day after that. Now you're hitting on me, and I'm saying, yes, please.
Yeah, right. Still what? Got
a
it.
Roller coaster.
And in the meantime, I have not bothered to explain to my child, daddy's dead.
His own father has passed.
Would he even care? He's so focused on the cat, he doesn't give a flying fuck where his dad is at. He also thinks he's still alive. He sees him on the TV commercial. He's like, daddy. Just tell him he's still alive. Yeah. It's fine.
Speaking of which, God, do you remember, like, TV commercials in the 80s, like, shaving commercials must have been less about, like, you do one pull on the side of your face and then you cut to, like, that feeling your face with your palm and be like, oh, yeah, that's good. Back then, no, we're going to walk you through all the steps
because,
of shaving.
Because you didn't have all the blades.
You had one blade, so we're going to be like, for the next 30 seconds, we're going to cover this guy getting every nook and cranny on his face.
You got to put a mountain of that stuff on you. You got one blade. You got to make that thing last for a while. You got to go a week, 2 weeks, maybe three.
Yeah.
These things are expensive.
Yeah.
You got to take your time. That's what all the shaving cream's all about.
Fair.
Erica, what did you love?
I'll keep it brief because Mark kept it long. I loved it all. I loved it from start to finish. The outfits, the Rhea Perlman, rambunctious little almost 5-year-old. The killer, his fucking disguise was just a fake mustache that wasn't even the color of his hair. He had a fake gray mustache that he put on.
Yep. Yeah, it didn't match it at all.
Oh my god. It looks so fake. He never for a minute felt scary when he's stalking them from his car, and you see him, he's laying down, slowly rises up. How does he know when to rise up? You're laying down. How do you know when they're coming out?
Right. It would be impossible.
Impossible. Where he has the newspaper up and then he's like, Every time he was on the screen, it was captivating. It was just so outrageous. Hot water took him down. That was his downfall. At the end, just hot water.
In the very beginning, they go to a wharf to have a private conversation about this deep espionage that they're doing, wearing suits.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly wharf wear.
Yeah.
Like, anyone that's out there is going to be like, who are these fuckers?
What are those two? What are they talking about?
Look at these.
Hey, let's... No good next five steps because they're not that far out.
Yeah.
It's not a big dock they're on.
And they're supposed to be in Seattle, so I don't know about the nonchalant Seattle suit wearers out on the wharf.
Let me just say, Erica, could this be a new top five for the year?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it is a strong runner.
Absolutely. I have a dangerous affection to this movie.
When I finished it, I thought, oh shit, I gotta watch this with my wife. Like, this is worthy of another watch.
I got to watch it again to do notes, and I was like, I'm so happy I get to watch this again. Oh.
When it ends on that, like, freeze frame of, like,
oh my god, the freeze frame. Oh, and just
Jesus.
I mean, the it's insane just amount all of it. Jokes that they just kind of are like, meh. Like, there's a scene where, like, mm-hmm. Rhea Perlman's taking the son on the bus, but before she does, she's like, we're gonna change your clothes. Like, that would, I don't know if she just is trying to make it fun or something, but it's, or it's like she's thinking he's gonna, you won't recognize him in this Spider-Man shirt. But she gives him a Spider-Man shirt, and the little boy, like, poses and shows his muscles, and she's like, great pectorals. Oh, and he's like, yes. What?
Oh, man, what great pectorals you have.
What are pectorals?
You too.
Thanks.
And I'm like, we're supposed to think that's a riot. Like, and I'm like, I love this movie. This movie is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Not to just keep harping on it, but Michael Parks, for me, there's too many things I love about this movie, for one. But Michael Parks, he makes that phone call, and he's like, don't worry, in 24 hours I'm going to get you this. He cannot deliver. He's so bad at this, being a bad guy. He is awful. He's
His word means nothing by the end of this.
Nothing.
Meaningless. They have to murder him just to be like, this guy, we have to murder this guy. He's no good. If he's not dead already, like in Grammy's house. But
Grammy took him out with hot water and a bonk with over the head with a pot.
Yeah.
That's all it took. Hot water. He was like,
Yeah. Ultimately, he's very soft.
Yeah. My psoriasis.
I was trying to make so many clips that it was like, I'm going to clip this whole damn movie. And it's because every scene is a delight. I don't know. I'm sorry, but this was just like a very comforting movie and I adored it. But let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
The Hitman's ultimate performance review, because it's not going to be good. No plan. He didn't deliver on any timeline that he promised. His communication was terrible. He never was like, I know we're late, but here's what we're going to do to get caught up. Nothing. He is going to have a horrible performance review.
It's like, it's one of those, like, it would be a plot to another movie where it's like, you know, it's like Home Alone, basically, where it's like, I just got to get this dang stamp off this kid's hand. And it's like, they're not playing Michael Parks that way, but he is exactly that ludicrous and buffoonish that he can't get a stamp off a child's hand. Like, this is not hard. Mm-hmm. He cannot come up with anything. He's stymied by the woman in the office at the preschool. He's like, well, shit, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark, to your point, he didn't go through the circular door to just go swipe and grab it and run off. Like, what? You were even awful at this, dude.
Even at the daycare, he could have found one of the janitors or something and been like, I'm going to just knock him over the head and grab his suit and walk in and take, like, this guy, he's in suits only and sunglasses. With sometimes a really horrible mustache. And that is the only plan he has, which it's comedic. Like, as a boss, you'd say, that's what you did? That was your plan.
It's the silliest. So, Erica, what did you hate?
I don't think I hated anything. other than Claudia not being able to be there for the birth of the child. You know, she was at the birthing classes. She was there. So I think that's the only thing that I hated. I'm sorry. This is nitpicky, but I did hate that, you know, Jimmy Smits, I'm sure you are a good detective, but you didn't search the garage. You did one sweep of the house. Mm. You felt like that was enough. Yeah. You didn't bother to go back and look into the barn and see that he was there with his car, with his absolute car. You didn't notice that an absolute stranger's car was parked in the barn.
Jimmy Smits is not a good detective.
He's not, right?
He doesn't figure anything out.
But he
until it's happened.
But he is a good lover.
Yeah.
He's apparently good at making lamb chops. I'm going to give him
he's
that.
A lover, 100%. He's a lover, not a copper.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
He also kisses a child. He kisses that child.
Oh, yes. Very uncomfortable.
I was like, oh, you just gave him a little kiss on the head. And I don't think that is your child, nor...
Hmm. Nor have you known him more than 72 hours.
Yeah.
So that's
weird. Just gave him a quick on the head. I was like, oh.
Not only that, he has been with the mom at his apartment. He's barely met this kid. Then he, like, takes him to calm him down by, like, shaking him in his bed. Do. Like, just kind of shaking him. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, okay, I'm tired. Stop shaking me. And then he's like, okay, good night. Kisses him on the forehead. I'm like, you don't know this kid.
Yeah.
And it's not like a baby where you maybe just get overwhelmed and it's a baby and you're like, it's so cute. Well, it's a baby. But you don't know this kid. You don't know this kid at all. Mm-hmm. You've been hanging with the mom. And this kid doesn't know you.
Yeah.
You just read him a story once.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he has sympathy on him because that kid's a fucking psychopath. So he's like, I'll just give you a little kiss because you don't care.
I don't know. Maybe some love will tear you away from doing Satan's bidding. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. I hate to say what I hated because it does tie into my favorite scene, but they never call a damn doctor after she gives birth. I'm like, you guys just good? The doctor just shows up, Ryan.
The doctor was on the way, Ryan. He was on the way. He shows up.
He was on the way, but I'm saying the next day, they already have the cops going through the whole thing. They got all these people there.
The doctor came in that night. He had the little bump on his head and the mom.
He was the veterinarian. Where's the actual doctor? The OBGYN.
That was it. Small town living.
I'm just saying. Yeah. After everything was all said and done.
Kathy just took care of it. She just handled it. She
handled it like a champ.
Not all doctors are good, but he was there.
You know what? You know what, guys? You're right. I didn't hate anything. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
Like the last 10 minutes of the movie.
It's incredible stuff.
I'm just quickly bullets. Hitman. Richard kissing Sam all creepy-like. The fight.
Creepy, wonderful. The fight in the dark hallway? You can't even see what's happening.
The fight in the dark hallway. He brings the gun, but not until the end he uses a knife. And then everyone's like, what's going on up there? Even though they're obviously fighting. Then you have the pregnancy. Then you have the proposal.
Then you have the proposal. Grandma
hitting the hitman. No, grandma's tending to the needs of the doctor. And I'm like,
who she's hitting on. So we're getting her story where suddenly she's like,
she's just like, hey, you, I'm down to pound. And I'm like,
do you live around here? I'm like, what? We don't need this.
Someone almost killed your daughter,
your kid,
and your grandson. A murderer is in the house, and you're only caring about proposing to a woman you met 3 days ago.
3 days ago, dude.
It was the greatest ending of any movie I've ever seen in my life.
Agreed.
I can't disagree either. Hey, Erica, your favorite scene.
Totally agree. Absolutely agree. Loved it. I think the only scene that trumps it for me is unnecessary workout scene from super ripped other detective.
Yeah.
Do we need to see her come in? Undress, work out, answer the phone, start to get... I mean, it is such... It takes such a long time for her to uncover him in the shower. It's
her last workout.
That, to me, was the comedy. That she does a full workout and then is like, okay, answered my call, time to get a shower. I'm dead. Like, I just... I laughed because I'm like, how long was he holding in a fart inside that shower of like,
or just being like, I gotta pee. I gotta pee. Oh shit, I gotta pee.
I mean, he was waiting for a while in there. So I loved it. Loved it.
For me, going back to the ending of the movie, the birth scene.
Oh.
Okay, one of the least believable birthing scenes on earth, and I loved it every second of it. I love her moment of saying, like,
Richard, I'm perfectly calm. I am in enormous pain, but I'm almost serene.
It's, I don't even think Mike Nichols himself could have made this any better. It's an incredible scene. And it's capped off, this Jimmy Smith ends up delivering this baby, which he has no business doing and shouldn't be able to accomplish. And but he caps it off with this incredible line.
Next time we have sex first, then the baby.
Oh my God.
Are you trying to give a panty dropper? Because my panties are off because I have one pair of panties and I wore them here and I ripped them off when I had the baby. So I'm just nude from the waist down, but hey. From the
waist down. And I just gave birth to a baby.
Just gave birth. And no anesthesia by candlelight. By candlelight.
A baby that is 3 months old.
You have a baby that's already 2 months old.
Yeah, really been but sure, there for let's a while. Talk about when we're going to bone down. You know what? Oh.
Amazing stuff. If we can, let's go to final questions. So many questions.
I loved it. Here we go. Next question.
Did you guys all go to birthing classes in someone's high-rise apartment?
Ooh, no. No. No.
That view out the window is like we're clearly on floor 10 or something of a high rise looking out. I was like, jeez, we didn't do this on the ground floor. We got to go high up.
I was in a hospital and I ran into a guy that I had met through work. And he was like, oh, my gosh, you're doing it. You're doing the birthing. You're doing your whatever, doing the baby here. I know that's not the right way to say it. You're going to have the baby here. And
at a hospital? Like, yes. At a hospital, how perceptive.
The hospital, yeah, same hospital. And so when our daughter was born, I go into the first bath, and he's there because his wife had her baby the same day. And I was like, I can't escape this guy. I thought that he was Claudia following me everywhere.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we had our baby born with a detective we just met in Erica's parents' house. Like that's by candlelight.
As you do. The right way.
So this is a personal question, but how long do you think you could go without washing the back of your hand?
Oh shit. That stamp would have been off day one. Day so fast. One. It would so have been fast. Like I love this stamp. Okay, off onto the side of the tub. Now, it may have stayed on the side of the tub for days, but it would have been on the side of the tub.
To answer it for me, I'm pretty gross. I feel like I could go for a while, leave it on there and be like, I'm fine. It would be simmering. Yeah. It'd be like, you need to really like. Mm.
You might be able to do that. You would never let our kids do that. Like, never in a million years would you let them keep that on for.
So
like
that
an
stamp
afternoon.
Would be like an old cast where you're like, it's starting to get stinky.
It'd be part of me. I'd be like, look.
Erica, when you were pregnant, do you feel cheated that I never let you wear my tuxedo shirts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all the time. I try not to think about it, but yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That is the woman that Jimmy Smits is like, hell yes.
Mm-hmm. It's Judith Light. Have you ever been in her presence, pregnant or not? You'd be sucked in too.
No doubt.
Question for you guys. When they go to the coffee shop, is he drinking hot cocoa?
Probably.
I think probably. So. He feels like he brings her man. Milk, her warm milk, and she's like, I hate milk.
How are you? He's like, drink it. You need it. You need the calcium.
But when you see him taking a sip, there's a foam on top. I thought they might be marshmallows. Also, with the warm milk, I thought my dad made warm milk for me once. And I was like, this tastes like shit.
Wow. Dad made you warm milk?
God, yes, because I couldn't sleep. And so he made me warm milk, and I took one sip, and I was like, this tastes like shit. And the reason is because when warm milk is heated, the chemical structure, specifically through the denaturation of proteins and caramelization of lactose, milk. Which wow, is God the milk him. Sugar, makes it taste funny.
Thank you.
Because when it's heated above 155 degrees, which is close to boiling, sulfur-contained compounds are released, and they create a cooked, sulfury, slightly sweet, caramel-like taste that differs from fresh, neutral-taste cold milk. Now, I had one sip, and I said, this tastes like garbage. I've never had warm milk since. Question. Final questions. Do you think I would like warm milk now?
No.
No.
Nope.
Nope. I don't.
No, I do not.
Okay.
I don't think anyway, warm milk is an acquired taste. I think warm milk is like, it's a yes or a no.
Let's go to some quick research. This project is announced. This goes really quickly. So this project's announced in like, finally announced in June of 1987. And its initial title was Hit and Run. Which makes what? Even less sense than Dangerous Affection as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
What is Hit and Run about? Anyway, I don't know. But it was actually shot a month before. May 1987, Seattle, Washington. It's a three-week shoot. They shoot the movie. Funny story is that, of course, Judith Light is playing a pregnant woman, but she was not pregnant. She was padded up to look pregnant. Rhea Perlman was actually pregnant at the time, and they had to mask her pregnancy. So she didn't look pregnant, but made... Judith Light looked so, and Judith Light said this about what they did. She said, quote, they padded my breasts with bird seed. We did a scene in the park. I said, yeah. We did a scene in the park. I said, keep the pigeons away from me.
Yeah.
Wow.
Can't blame
her. Was it that emotional scene that we talked about where Jimmy Smits is, they're kind of hitting on each other? I don't know. I don't know. That'd be amazing. This movie comes out though in November 1st is when it premieres on TV on NBC, I believe, at 9 o'clock Sunday night, November 1st, 1987, going up against The Tracy Ullman Show and Duet. Also, Echoes in the Darkness, part one of two, Echoes in the Darkness, produced by New World Television. So they were competing against themselves. And so it does finally come out. So we're talking, it's shot in May and out in November. This goes by very quickly.
Wow.
Super quick.
It does eventually go get released on VHS in the UK in May of 1988 as Dangerous Affection. Along with that same month, Beyond Therapy, which also was released by New World Pictures. It doesn't get onto New World Video until 1989, December of 1989, when they have already sold New World to new owners. But this must have just been in the pipeline. It gets released on video, $60.
Oof. I mean,
wow. along with another title. Worth is it?
I mean, compared to some of the other movies that we've talked about that were sold for much, much higher. Like, if you were to do, just look at, like, all these movies we've talked about, 80, 90, 90, 90, 90, 60.
Yeah.
Spend the 60. At 60, least you get repeat viewing out of it.
It feels like that's kind of where we are with prices. Maybe not, as I'm looking for some of the other movies that were released around that time. But also released by New World Video at that time, Northern Lights. $60.
Which one was Northern Lights?
Joe Spano, Robert Belling, Susan Lynch. A drama about the struggle of farmers against Eastern monopolies in 1915 North Dakota. a prize winner at the Cannes Film Festival, directed by John Hansen and Robert Nilsson.
Okay.
So, we'll get to that at some point.
Wow. I can't wait? Question mark?
I can't wait either. But that is it for Dangerous Affection, a.k.a. Stamp of a Killer. Final thoughts.
Wow. I'm glad we're all in this together. Freeze frame.
Credits roll. A movie ends with a freeze frame. And, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah. This is, we're early in the year, but man, this is a contender for top five.
What fun.
Without
what
question. Fun. This was
how ridiculous.
This was a blast.
Yeah.
It's now, just I want to be clear. Holy shit, is it fun?
Yeah. It's so fun. Yeah, it's just such a fun movie. It was an absolute blast.
If they would release the director's cut, I think it would be even better.
Thank you. The director's cut, of which we will do a commentary, because
who else? Let's do it.
Has to be us, and it has to be done. But if you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoyed all of our, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you enjoyed all of our episode of March Madness 2. You can catch all those episodes, catch up with us on our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can listen to all of our episodes. You can buy a t-shirt if you dare. I dare you to buy a t-shirt. You don't even have to buy one of our t-shirts. You can buy a New World Pictures t-shirt if you... I dare you to do it and support our show.
But you can't.
I dare you.
But you can't buy a t-shirt. I bet you won't buy two. Are you bad enough to buy two?
Yeah. Try it. Do you have enough balls to buy two? But go to our website, and that's where you can find all stuff related to this podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description.
The audio commentary. It's a dying art form, but here at One Track Mind, I, your wonky yet affable host, Ryan Luis Rodriguez, analyze film through the prism of these embryonic forms of podcasting, one audio commentary at a time. Masterpieces, crapster pieces, live action, animation, cult classics, films literally no one has ever heard of. No track is too small and no track is too big. Join me and my guests from the entertainment world as we keep these features alive every other Tuesday. Hey, who else is going to discuss Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey one week and Citizen Kane the next? Us, that's who. Sure, you have to put up with my voice, but there's a certain give and take in this industry. That's One Track Mind, part of the Someone's Favorite Productions family, and available wherever you get your podcasts.